Is it over? Oh my goodness, that was quick. Welcome to the program, Truth Seekers. Yeah, it's Friday evening. And yeah, thanks to my darling daughter, I've got another. This time it's a sinus cold. Oh, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. Makes me sound pathetic. Hey, what, you know, I missed, apparently, not apparently, I missed the entire Michael Phelps story. The multiple gold medal winner in swimming. What did he win? Eight? Was it eight? And I missed the whole thing. What's this? A British tabloid took a picture of him sucking on a bong, drawing marijuana into his lungs, apparently. And all hell broke loose. This is beyond crazy, of course. It's just beyond crazy. It's so far beyond crazy, it's in some other dimension. What's after crazy? I guess it'd be Limbaugh land, wouldn't it? But this whole story, Michael Phelps, who, as far as I know, is like a role model for kids, a good swimmer. Obviously, he's a good swimmer. Wasn't he, didn't he have some developmental problem, Kathy, like OCD or ADHD or something? He said that one time. He had a hard time concentrating, and swimming focused him.
I was going to take a swim, and then I got high.
I don't know why I asked you that question, but anyway, now it appears that America's premier cereal maker has decided to dump him. Kellogg's, the people who put out sugar frosted flakes and all kinds of stuff that, in my humble opinion, does far more damage to a sub-teen than smoking marijuana does to a fully developed adult. Oh, no, I understand. You know, Kellogg's can't have any of that. Like, all the six-year-olds are going to see that British tabloid photograph. And, well, of course, you know, it goes out on the internet. Hey, look at this here, Michael Phelps, sucking a lung full of smoke in. Hey, cool. Man. Anyway, the whole story just went right past me. And well, it should, because I'm so sick of stories like that. I really am. Somebody smokes a joint or takes a hit on a bong. Somebody who is a fully actualized adult. His mom did go with him to China, but I think she went as a, more or less a spectator rather than someone to chaperone him. But, so Michael Phelps' lucrative contract, out the window. I've always thought it was kind of ridiculous to have sports figures endorse anything, frankly, or to have anybody endorse anything. You know who should endorse, food? Parents. You know, just stop somebody in a supermarket and say, do you eat this particular brand of this? Yes, I do. Why? Well, it's good for me and my children. Oh, okay. Can we use your that comment in a commercial? Sure, go ahead. You know, what's up with celebrity endorsements? I mean, it's just ridiculous. And until you stop and think, that's what we do in this country. We You know, if somebody says, eat this, okay. You know, I want to be like Angelina Jolie, so I'll use a certain kind of something. I want to be like Brad Pitt, or I want to be like Michael Phelps. And I guess that's what Kellogg's figured. Too many kids out there. But what they don't realize is that Michael Phelps, after smoking that bong, probably grabbed the nearest box of Frosted Flakes and went through them in about 5 minutes, right? Never mind. Here's another coincidence. We've been focusing on coincidental death of people who may have had knowledge that they weren't supposed to have. The other night it was revealing that another person involved in the unexplained flying of six active nuclear bombs across the United States. Now the wing commander, or I'm not sure exactly, I don't have the story right in front of me, but he was found dead in a field near the Air Force Base, and so on and so forth. Here's another one. This is reported by CNN. A third soldier who signed onto a newspaper column about a year and a half ago criticizing the war in Iraq has died. He's 23. Specialist Jeremy Roebuck from Texas. He died from injuries in an automobile accident near Fort Bragg in North Carolina. He was a paratrooper and an assistant team leader for Squadron 73rd Cavalry Regiment, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 82nd Airborne. Now, the death notice was released by the military. A relative confirmed that he, Jeremy Roebuck, was one of the people, there were seven of them, I believe, who signed an August 19, 2007 op-ed article in the New York Times that called the prospects of U.S. success in Iraq, quote, far-fetched, end quote, and said the progress being reported was being offset by failures elsewhere. Seven soldiers signed the column. In September 2007, two of the other soldiers who signed the piece were killed in a truck accident outside Baghdad. So there are now four left. It's just coincidence. You know, young people, soldiers in their 20s, they're not very good drivers, and they have accidents. Right? I don't know about Leon Panetta. What is this the other day? He said he's not exactly sure that if he's confirmed as head of the CIA that the directive signed by President Obama ending our status as a country who tortures people that we buy near or around an area of insurgency. That's how we got so many of the detainees at just Guantanamo. God only knows about the other torture holes where we've put people. But we buy them. You know, somebody will show up at an outpost in Afghanistan or someplace and say, I have for you here a terrorist. Oh, yeah? Why? We saw him do terrorist things. Oh, okay, here's your check. And then that person sinks into the black hole of U.S. intelligence, never to emerge again until he's completely nuts from being tortured. And Barack Obama, of course, said, no, I don't think we ought to do that anymore. Well, Leon Panetta now is saying, hold on just a second here. Just a second here. And that's what he said the other day. And now we have this. The Obama administration will not prosecute CIA officers who participated in what critics say was torture. Notice how they always say that, in what critics say was torture. What does that mean? That non-critics would not call waterboarding torture, or tying off someone's testicles if it were a man, or maybe inserting a live electric wire inside a vagina. A critic might call that torture, or repeatedly brutalizing a detainee's child so the detainee can hear the screaming coming from the next room. Some people, critics, would call that torture. But people who understand, people in the know, would call that harsh interrogation tactics, right? So, Leon Panetta said today, the CIA director nominee, he's not even in the government. He said the Obama administration will not prosecute CIA officers who tortured. Asked by the Associated Press if that was official policy, meaning from the Obama administration, Panetta said, that is the case. Oh, really? Really? That seems to contradict the president. Well, we have a little more here when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. History. Would you believe he had an eye infection? And God looks baked. God smells good. What if God smoked cannabis? It's a bomb.
and the American Way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
So, Leon Panetta, our CIA director nominee, said today that the Obama administration will not prosecute CIA officers who participated in torture. And Panetta says that is official Obama administration policy. As reported by the AP, it was the clearest statement yet on what Panetta and other Democratic officials had only strongly suggested, that CIA officers who acted on legal orders from the Bush administration would not be held responsible for those policies. Isn't that the whole Nuremberg prosecution point of view? That, I mean, anyone in power can make anything legal. All Bush did was hire a couple of psychopaths, John Yoo and Alberto Gonzalez, to write all kinds of little memos that said, okay, it's okay, you can go ahead and torture because it is okay in a time of war with enemy combatants. You know, so that's how they make it legal. That's how Hitler made things legal. It was legal to round up the Jews, take them to camps, and murder them. It was legal. It was all legal. There were laws on the books. It was legal. CIA officers who acted on legal orders from the Bush administration will not be held responsible for those policies. And yesterday is when he told senators that the Obama administration had no intention of seeking prosecutions for that reason. It was legal. Jesus Christ. Panetta said that he arrived at that conclusion even before he began meeting with CIA officials. He said, quote, it was my opinion that we just can't operate if people feel, even if they're following the legal opinions of the Justice Department, that they could be in danger of prosecution. End quote. What? If they're acting on legal opinions of the Justice Department. Justice Department says to the CIA interrogators, okay, it is now legal when you have a detainee that has children to bring one of the children in and in front of the detainee decapitate the child. Set the body on the floor and watch its limbs flail, sort of like a chicken when you cut its head off. It is now legal to do that. So go ahead. If there is information you need from detainee X and detainee X has a child, get the child and cut its head off. And it's legal. Everything, it's okay. You can do it. And the CIA interrogator would do that? The CIA interrogator would torture someone? The CIA interrogator is so goddamn stupid that he has never heard of the Geneva Conventions, has never heard of the definition of war criminal, is not up on what was decided in 1946 and 47 in Nuremberg? Really? No kidding. Panetta wouldn't say whether or not the Obama administration would take legal action against those who authorized or wrote the legal opinions. Panetta said, quote, I'll leave that for others, end quote. You son of a bitch. You coward. Let me just guess here that what Panetta is really saying when he won't say whether the Obama administration will take legal action against those who authorize those legal opinions, what he's really saying is, no, of course we won't. What, are you crazy? You crazy? Oh, and Panetta told the committee that the Obama administration will continue to hand foreign detainees over to other countries for questioning, but only if the administration is confident the prisoners will not be tortured in the process. We have to be confident. We have to be confident when we extraordinarily rendition these people that they won't be tortured. Well, then why are you doing it? Leon, if I mean, what's the point in turning them over to countries that torture as long as you're convinced that the prisoners will not be tortured? Why are you turning them over at all? If for some action, real or imagined, that involves American sovereignty that we choose to label as illegal, why are they not brought here, Leon? God damn you, why are they not brought here and put on trial? This is sick. Nothing gets me more enraged, as evidenced by that immediately preceding outburst. Nothing gets me more enraged, I don't think, than this idea, these weasel words. What did Bob write who sent this to me? These are were-weasels. You've heard of werewolves. These are were-weasels. How can somebody say this kind of stuff? How can the United States of by God America, huh? This great Judeo-Christian country, Jesus on the cross, how can we send people to other countries to be tortured?
And now, a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So, Leon Panetta has assured the American public and the neo-fascists, both Republican and Democrat, on the committees that are questioning him, or the committee that's questioning him, that the Obama administration is may or may not continue torture policies, A. B, we will continue renditioning people to countries that do torture, but only, of course, if we're convinced they're not going to torture those people. And C, we will never prosecute Americans who have conducted torture, regardless of what we had agreed to and pushed at Nuremberg. Ah, who remembers Nuremberg? We executed Nazis that used that lawyer defense that said, well, I was only following legal orders. And the second round of Nuremberg trials, Prairie Two writes, we executed the lawyers for using. And Bill writes, the Nuremberg defense is the one that states that the defendant was only following orders. And, of course, under the Nuremberg principles, it says, quote, the fact that a person acted pursuant to order of his government or of a superior does not relieve him from responsibility under international law, provided a moral choice was in fact possible to him. Yeah. And of course, the U.S. military adjusted the Uniform Code of Military Justice after World War II. They included a rule, Bill from Ottawa writes, nullifying the defense that I was only following orders, essentially stating that American military personnel are allowed to refuse unlawful orders. You know, we all know that. But Leon Panetta has decided, well, no. And sending, renditioning people to countries that torture only if we are convinced they won't torture is kind of an asinine statement anyway, because a detainee could be handed over to another country for reasons other than we think he's a terrorist. It may be because that prisoner might have intelligence value that the United States wants to get in order to say, well, he's got information that has to do with global terrorist groups. So will you question him for us?
Uh-huh.
But the country to whom these people are sent might, you know, if the guy, for example, is Egyptian and he's sent to Egypt, where it's well known that they torture anybody for anything. You jaywalk and wind up in jail, they'll torture you to see if you're a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. But anyway, So we send an Egyptian to Egypt. And supposing the Egyptian torture people look at this guy and say, wait a minute. Didn't we bust you 6 years ago for holding an illegal demonstration against our exalted leader, Hosni Mubarak? Didn't we? Aren't you a member of the... You're a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, you son of a bitch! And then they start torturing him, you see? If the government to whom we send our hapless detainees have more localized security problems than, our concern about the global war on terror, they may decide, well, we told the United States we wouldn't torture these people for the reasons they sent him to us. But we didn't say we wouldn't torture him, period. See the wiggle room there? Huh? You see the little bit of wiggle room? And then, to add massive insult to injury, Panetta formally retracted today a statement he made Thursday. He said that the Bush administration transferred prisoners for the purpose of torture. Today he changed it and said, I'm not aware of the validity of those claims. And why did he do that? Because a Republican Nazi, Senator Kit Bond from Missouri, kicked Panetta's ass by saying, Mr. Panetta, you cannot be making statements or making judgments based on rumors and news stories. End quote. So Panetta today sucked his scrotum up into his body cavity, tucked his tail between his legs and say, okay, I'm sorry. I'm not aware of the validity of any of those claims. I know nothing. Panetta went on to say that he really believed the Bush administration was trying to protect the country from terrorists with its use of secret prisons, renditions, and torture. He said, quote, I think they made some wrong decisions. I think they made mistakes. I think sometimes they believe the end justifies the means, and that's where people sometimes go wrong, end quote. Leon, people always go wrong when the illogic of the ends justifies the means is applied, no matter what the ends result in. That is sick, perverted, inverted, stupid thinking. And you're going to be the head of the CIA. Sure you are. Panetta said that he believes the greatest weapon the United States has against terrorists is its moral authority, and it's a commitment and its commitment to the rule of law. He said, quote, the sense that we are willing to set that aside did damage our security, end quote. Oh, my God. And then talk about weasel words. What about this? Panetta said the Obama administration will no longer move detainees to secret CIA prisons for interrogation. Secret CIA prisons? We have secret, of course we do. That will no longer happen, Panetta said, because these so-called black sites have been ordered closed. I ordered them closed. Okay, they're closed. They're closed. But, Panetta said, we will move prisoners to other countries for prosecution. And again, I come back to the most obvious teardown of all that, and it's a simple question. Why are we moving people anywhere if we decide that they are prosecutable? We're no longer a country, a nation of laws. Please understand that. And when my daughter Molly, who is in preschool, when she gets into second or third or fourth grade, if I'm still alive, and she comes home to tell me, Daddy, we are taking American history and American government now. I will sit her down and explain to her as calmly as I can. Now, this depends on her teacher. Hopefully, she will have an instructor who will be honest. But I will have to explain to her, Molly, what you are learning in school is propaganda. It is a lie. And if it persists, of course, I'll have to take her out of school and probably homeschool her. I think Kathy and I could homeschool Molly. What is really upsetting to me is just me, in my little tiny world here, I have to go back and realize that all that stuff that I had in high school, when I studied at university level, and though I never got a degree, when I studied at university, it was a lot different. I took political science, international relations, English. The English, that was a whole different thing. But the political courses I took, at least we had professors who were communists or socialists or left-wing activists who actually instructed us in the truth. But I go back before that, back to high school, back to American government, American history. Those civics courses that were required, people who were on a college track, you know, they tracked us back in the day. Back when I was in elementary school and in high school, they tracked us. The sons of bitches tracked us. They actually did. They decided who was going to get a decent education and who was not. Not based on, you know, what your real intelligence quotient might be, but what your numbers popped up on any given day. It was awful. It was horrible. I don't know. Maybe they still do that. But we were taught, people in my class were taught all this stuff about the sanctity of the law. We were taught. We are a nation of laws. And it was not that long ago at the time that the principles had been laid down at Nuremberg. I mean, that was 46 and 47, right? And I was in these elementary and middle school grades in the 50s. So it wasn't not that much time had separated the principles of Nuremberg and those legal principles that were used to prosecute some of the worst criminals that Western Europe ever produced. I say Western Europe because, you know, I mean, what the Nazis did was horrifying. It really was. But there have been other mass murderers. There have been other genocides. There have been other sweeping, assaulting attacks on people because of their ethnicity or their race or their religious beliefs or their lack of religion. Blah, 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 blah. So, and I sucked it all up. Didn't you? Huh? If you're above a certain age, if you're older than 35 or 40, didn't you? Huh? Didn't you? didn't we? Didn't we suck it up? You understand now that it no longer applies. Now, what does that mean to you and me? Doesn't have to mean anything as long as we're able to step outside of our sense of morality or ethics and say, or remain inside our ethics and morality and step outside of our society. I guess it's our choice, isn't it? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
That you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Where'd our music go? Ghosts. 10 before the hour. All right, now, let me tie a couple things together for you very quickly here. In the New York Times yesterday editorial titled Unraveling Justice, a couple of sentences here. Listen to this. The Bush administration's attacks on the rule of law in the name of fighting terrorism have saddled President Obama and his legal team, starting with Attorney General Eric Holder, with some urgent cleanup work. Mr. Obama's early executive orders to prohibit torture, shut secret prisons overseas, and direct closure of the detention camp at Guantanamo within a year were a promising start. The administration also faces urgent deadlines in court cases where President Bush's lawyers were trying to expand executive power and impose a blanket of secrecy to avoid having to defend indefensible decisions. The cases give Mr. Obama a chance to show how serious he is about repairing Mr. Bush's legacy of harm. The first test comes on Monday in San Francisco, were three judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. Remember that. The Ninth Circuit are scheduled to hear arguments in a civil case involving kidnapping and torture. The Bush team was using one of its signature legal tactics, stretching the evidentiary rule known as the state secrets privilege to avoid having the detainees' claims ever heard. The five plaintiffs, victims of Mr. Bush's extraordinary rendition program, were seized and transported to secret American facilities abroad or to countries known for torturing prisoners on flights organized by a private U.S. contractor, Jeppesen Data Plan. Now there's more. But here we go. Three judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit are scheduled on Monday to hear a case involving kidnapping and torture. Uh-oh. The Ninth Circuit Court? On the West Coast? Uh-oh. Jude writes, Mike, just a reminder of Jay Bibee, who in August 2002 was the Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Counsel. He approved John Yoo's legal definition of torture. It was called the Bibee Memo. It had been a request from CIA and had been sent on to Gonzalez, who was the White House General Counsel. Jay Bibee now sits on the Ninth Circuit as a judge. Hello? Jesus Christ. The guy who approved John Yoo's definition of torture and that it was legal, the lawyer, the assistant attorney general, who more or less said, oh, yeah, well, that's okay. There are circumstances where we can torture. Yeah, all we have to do is be a little bit suspicious. We don't need any proof. We don't need, we need nothing. As a matter of fact, all we need to do is pay the money for these prisoners, and as we buy them from the Northern Alliance or this group or that group, and then send them places where they can be tortured. And it's all legal. Yeah, it's all legal. This guy, Jay Bibee, is now a federal judge who sits on the Ninth Circuit Court. And it is the Ninth Circuit Court, Monday, that will hear arguments in a civil case. Not criminal, civil. Involving the kidnapping and torture of five victims of Bush's extraordinary rendition program. Oh, well, so much for that. Hey, I wonder if the five guys realize who's going to hear their case. The person who said that what happened to them was legal. And if that's really the way the situation is, then doesn't that mean that Judge Bibee will either have to rule against these people or declare himself to be, by ruling in favor of them, a lying son of a bitch who set in motion torture on a scale that we don't even know about by his interpretation of John Yoo's memo? You see what I'm saying? Where does Judge Bibee have any choice here but to dismiss the five plaintiffs' case? You tell me, truth seeker. I don't see a way out for this rancid bastard, the judge. Oh, by the way, as Jude writes, he is a father of four young children. And then she adds, Jude does almost as a postscript, who are these men, Mike? I don't know. They're nobody that I hope to ever come in contact with, because I would spit in their face. I would. And then I would be definitely prosecuted for simple assault. Yeah, damn. I wonder if Judge Bibee will recuse himself. There's an out. See, judges can always do that. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear this. Why not? Well, because I'm the one as that was legal to begin with. Small technicality there, wouldn't you say? Jesus God. So, a person who writes memos, John Yoo, maintains his, after he leaves the Bush crime family's nest of fascists, he maintains his teaching position at University of California, Berkeley, which again, every time I say that sentence, it just astonishes me. Astonishes me. But this guy is teaching college students, university students, the principles of law. But not only the John Yoo retains his exalted position as a tenured college, a university professor, but Jay Bybee, who wrote the memo that Yoo apparently interpreted as being legal, Bybee gets promoted from a torture-sucking attorney in the Bush crime family to a federal judgeship so that he can preside over cases like the one coming his way Monday. Do you see anything wrong with that? All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears and talk about the economy. And I want you to hear Barack Obama at his finest. We have to really shift gears here because now it's going to be Barack Obama, the economic savior, not Barack Obama, the, I don't know. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Liz writes in, Mitch McConnell just got up on the Senate floor to denounce, again, FDR's New Deal and to assert that it is absolute truth that it did not work and that the stimulus bill is another New Deal that won't work. Republicans are going to fight tooth and nail to bring down the country in their catechism that the New Deal must be reversed and any revival must be destroyed. Oh, they make me so angry. My blood pressure is up again and my calm following the inauguration has slipped away. Rat bastards is too good a term for them. Liz writes, all right, let's hear what President Obama said. This is yesterday, I believe. Some strong words from Obama about the foot dragging in Congress over his stimulus plan.
People know that our challenges are great. They're not expecting Democratic solutions or Republican solutions. They want American solutions. I've said that same thing to the public, and I've said that in a gesture of friendship and goodwill to those who have disagreed with me on aspects of this plan.
Yeah, how's that working?
But what I have also said is don't come to the table with the same tired arguments and worn ideas that helped to create this crisis.
Yeah, how's that bipartisan thing working?
So I welcome this debate, but come on, we are not going to get relief by turning back to the very same policies that for the last 8 years doubled the national debt and threw our economy into a tailspin. We can't embrace the losing formula that says only tax cuts will work for every problem we face, that ignores critical challenges like our addiction to foreign oil, or the soaring costs of health care, or falling schools and crumbling bridges and roads and levees. I don't care whether you're driving a hybrid or an SUV. If you're headed for a cliff, you've got to change direction.
Yeah, but Mr. President, how's that friendship and goodwill thing happening? Let's see, you went to talk with the Republicans, you went into their nest, you invited them over for cocktails, you had this sick son of a bitch McCain in for din-din. I mean, you gotta understand something, Mr. President. What you're trying to do might have worked 50 years ago. But honest to God, Mr. President, Republicans want to see you fail. You've heard the leader of their party, Rush Limbaugh. You've heard their party leadership, Rush Limbaugh and Joe the Plumber and Sarah Palin. They want you to fall flat on your face. Work with you. excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm not showing the proper respect. Obama explained then why it's important to stop playing the old political games when the nation is teetering on the brink of total economic failure.
If we do not move swiftly to sign the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act into law, an economy that is already in crisis will be faced with catastrophe. Millions more Americans will lose their jobs.
Republicans love
homes
that.
Homes will be lost.
Republicans
families
love that.
Families will go without health care.
Republicans love it.
Crippling dependence on foreign oil will continue. That is the price of inaction. This isn't some abstract debate. Last week we learned that many of America's largest corporations already laid off thousands and are planning to lay off tens of thousands of more workers. Today we learned that in the previous week the number of new unemployment claims jumped to 626,000. Tomorrow we're expecting another dismal jobs report on top of the 500,000 jobs that were lost last month, on top of the 500,000 jobs that were lost the month before that, on top of the 2.6 million jobs that were lost last year. That it is important for us to set aside some of the gamesmanship in this town and get something done.
Mr. President, anybody who has respect for the country and the people in this country knows that. But you're dealing with Republicans. Jesus Christ Almighty, don't you get it yet? I guess not. Then Mr. Obama took some swipes at the Bush crime family's huge deficits and recession that they left him to clean up. So all the neocons who are whining about this package should take it to Raisin Brain and Cheney, because they are the creators of this disaster.
Legislation of this magnitude deserves the scrutiny that it's received. And all of you will get another chance to vote for this bill in the days to come. But I urge all of us not to make the perfect the enemy of the absolutely necessary. Understand, the scale and the scope of this plan is right. And when you start hearing arguments on the cable chatter, just understand a couple of things. Number one, when they say, well, why are we spending $800 billion? We've got this huge deficit. First of all, I found this deficit when I showed up.
Uh-huh.
Number one, I found this national debt doubled, wrapped in a big bow waiting for me as I stepped into the Oval Office. Number two, it is expected that we are going to lose about $1 trillion worth of demand this year, $1 trillion of demand next year because of the contraction of the economy. So the reason that this has to be big is to try to fill some of that lost demand. And as it is, there are many who think that we should be doing even more.
Yeah, I'm one of those. And again, I asked the question purely rhetorically, because Barack Obama knows I exist about as much as he knows any little blip in the 300 million of us exists. I honestly believe he's still trying to do good. But my take is it's not nearly big enough. A. B. No, that's B. A. Barack Obama ought to ignore the Republicans. Screw them. God damn them. Just forget them, Mr. President. They're not going to do anything except try to make sure you fail. You've got your majorities. Christ Almighty, the American public gave you everything you need to get this done. To hell with compromise. When have the Republicans ever compromised on anything except the destruction of the country? Compromise? What did the filthy Republican Brent or Brit, whatever the hell his name is, compromise is another word, a term for date rape or bipartisanship or something. It means the same. Why are you doing this, Mr. President? Why don't you tell these Republicans to go sit down and shut the hell up? Look what they've done to the country, and you want to include them. I mean, that's admirable. It's honorable. I'm sure that, to use a racial example, I'm sure that Dr. King tried to get Bull Connor to sit down and talk about why black folks shouldn't be beaten into a bloody pulp when they're trying to register to vote. But let me ask you something, Mr. President. Do you think Bull Connor listened? No, he didn't. And I know, because I was alive, and I know what happened. He turned on the dogs and the fire hoses and said to the demonstrators who were seeking justice and peace and the right to be a human being in this country to go screw themselves. So why are you dealing with the Bull Connors? They're never going to listen to you. You think Mitch McConnell or this freak from South Carolina, what's his name, Senator, you know. You think any of these people are going to give a damn? Do you think, oh crap mouth, these white southern boys from Alabama are going to pay any attention to anything you say? Compromise. Kick their asses, Mr. President. Ignore them. Send them back to their districts. Let them go back and say, we don't like this plan, and the Democrats are keeping us out of it. Let them do that. And 2 years from now, when these swine are up for re-election and the economy is starting to turn, then what are they going to do? Take credit for it? Mr. President, Republicans want to see you fail, and they want to see America die. You know, why keep playing with these fools, huh? We'll be right back.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's 21 past the hour. All right, here's the last one from yesterday. Obama hammering away at the ongoing criticism of his plan. The criticism, there is valid criticism that can be leveled at this plan, but in my opinion, it's because it doesn't go far enough. You know, these filthy goddamn Republicans, you know, tax cut. Where are we now? The unemployment numbers came out today. We're approaching 8% unemployed. By the end of this year, what do you want to bet? We're going to be in double digits, 10, maybe 11%. No, you don't think so? Watch. It's getting worse and worse and worse. The average American family, and I consider us, my little family in that group. I consider my daughters and their children in that group. I consider my son and his wife in that group. The average of us out here in the real world, do you think we care about tax cuts? For whom? For whom? You know they're going to be top-loaded the way they always are. And these filthy pig bastard Republicans, they want part of the stimulus cut. Oh, make permanent Bush's tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy. Oh, and don't forget, cut capital gains taxes. Capital gains? Who in the hell's got capital gains this year? But the Republicans, they're going to go back to their home districts, really? And tell all the unemployed people, well, I tried to get a tax cut for you. Well, you dumb son of a bitch, I'm not going to pay any taxes this year. I'm not working! I'm not making any money! What taxes are you going to cut? I hate these people. The Republican Party needs to be murdered, just murdered. Obama again.
Then there's the argument, well, this is full of pet projects. When was the last time that we saw a bill of this magnitude move out with no earmarks in? Not one. And when you start asking, well, what is it exactly that is such a problem that you're seeing? Where's all this waste and spending? Well, you know, you want to replace the federal fleet with hybrid cars. Well, why wouldn't we want to do that? That creates jobs for people who make those cars. It saves the federal government energy. It saves the taxpayers' energy. So, well, then you get the argument, well, this is not a stimulus bill, this is a spending bill. What do you think a stimulus is? That's the whole point. No, seriously. That's the point.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is the point. Of course it's a spending bill. Oh, my God. Kate writes, Mike, I think President Obama should threaten the Republicans with National Security Presidential Directive 51. It encompasses economic crisis. And if we are not in crisis, I don't know the definition. How would they like to have one of their own tactics used against them? We all need to inundate the White House with emails telling him that the Republicans are at war with us, and he will find no bipartisanship from them, and he needs to stop trying. That's what I've been doing. Just a thought, Kate. Yeah, let's invoke Presidential Directive 51. Send in whatever troops are available in around the D.C. area. Send them in and at gunpoint round up the Republicans because they're a threat to national security. God damn it, if we get a bunch of people out here on the street and we start demonstrating and somebody throws a brick and it goes through the window of a bank someplace, how quickly do you think it would take for the National Guard or the state police or somebody to move in with tear gas and clubs and people get locked up? How quickly would a broken pane of glass result in that? All right? But the Republicans, you see, in the House and the Senate can work in absolute opposition. They are terrorists that are destroying the country. They won't be happy, these rat bastards, until the country is destroyed. Mr. President, part of your Bush legacy is Directive 51. Round them up, Mr. President. Lock the sons of bitches down until the damage that they're trying to do can't be done again. This is the worst the economy's been since, I love this, since, what are they saying, 92. That was the result of the last Bush bastard. Since 82, 83, 84. The last Reagan bastard. I mean, oh, Jesus. And Nixon and Ford. Remember Gerald Ford? No, nobody remembers Gerald Ford. But I do, in the mid-70s. You remember his little win buttons? Do you remember those buttons that said W-I-N, win? You put one of those on, and what it said was, the win stood for whip inflation now. Huh? Another Republican. The Republican Party needs to be suffocated. It needs to be hanged. It needs to be eliminated from American life forever. Use Directive 51, Mr. President. Round these sons of bitches up and lock them up. I've been drinking gin like never before. I feel so good that I want you to know. I tell me one more drink. I wish you would. It takes a whole lot of loving to make me feel good.
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Jameson Foster is Executive Vice President at Media Matters for America, and he said, was it today or yesterday, that if there's one fact that should be made clear in every news report about this stimulus package working its way through Congress, it's this: government spending is stimulative, which is what Obama just said. Jameson Foster, as he points out, there's a basic principle of economics, and understanding it is essential to assessing any stimulus package. So it should be an underlying premise of the media's coverage of the stimulus debate. Unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. Reporters routinely suggest that spending is not stimulative. But Mr. Foster, reporters in this country are total jackasses, with a couple of notable exceptions, most of whom report business news. Like Susan Lisovich. She always gets it right. He says, unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. Indeed, reporters routinely suggest that spending is not stimulative. Economist Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, explains, quote, spending that is not stimulus is like cash that is not money. Spending is stimulus. Any spending will generate jobs. It's that simple. Any reporter who does not understand this fact has no business reporting on the economy. End quote. And as Foser writes, unfortunately, many of the reporters who have shaped the stimulus debate don't seem to understand that. I would disagree with that, Mr. Foser. I think they understand it, but they are whores for their corporate pimps. No offense to sex workers. They, Charlie Gibson and the rest of these fools, do exactly what they're told. Speaking of Gibson, he recently portrayed spending and stimulus as opposing concepts in a question to Obama during one of those sit-downs. Charlie said, quote, and as you know, there are a lot of people in the public. Who would that be, Charlie? You don't know a goddamn thing about the public. There are a lot of people in the public, a lot of members of Congress. That would be the Republicans, right? Who think this is pork stuffed. And that it really doesn't stimulate. A lot of people have said it's a spending bill and not a stimulus, end quote. And see, it's that statement. It's a spending bill and not a stimulus. It's complete nonsense. It's like saying this is a hot fudge sundae, not a dessert. But that's what you get, truth seeker, if you turn on television. How many times? I get so tired of it. These half-witted, uneducated reporters and news anchors and readers who sit there all day long, who don't have a clue as to what they're talking about, but they are framing the issue. And the Republicans who are on the phone with these jackasses 24/7, here, say this, it's this, now say this. You want another example? MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski, boy, has she turned out to be a disappointment, eh? She has repeatedly suggested on Morning Joe that so-called welfare provisions in the bill won't stimulate the economy. That is the exact opposite of a true statement. Those provisions, the so-called welfare provisions, are among the most stimulative things the government can possibly do. And there's some fairly obvious reasons why that's true, beginning with the fact that if you give a poor person $100 in food stamps, guess what? You can be pretty sure they're going to spend all $100 of it. But if you give a rich person $100 in tax cuts, they probably won't spend any of it at all. Oh, Mika, you're such a dumbass. You're such a dumbass. You really are. Oh, my God. And you know, a year ago when you started showing up with Joe Scarborough, I thought, oh, good. Here's somebody who will offset Joe Scarborough's raving Nazism. And he's gotten in, and Pat Buchanan's, and he's gotten inside your head, Mika, hasn't he? And he has eaten your brains. You are a robot. Watch these two some morning on MSNBC from Willion, 6 to 9, 7 to 9. Watch them. As she tries to get a word in edgewise, and he won't let her, until finally she just stares at him like, okay, beat me, flail me, what can I say? And she's becoming him because he ate her brains. It's another one of those like Limbaugh does, a straw right up the nose of his hapless listeners. out go the brains. And as Jameson Fosier from Media Matters says, at this point it becomes impossible to ignore the elephant in the room. Television anchors like Charlie Gibson are not going to qualify for food stamps anytime soon, but they would certainly benefit greatly from some tax cut provisions that wouldn't do nearly as much to stimulate the economy. Why, hell no. You get somebody like Charlie Gibson, what does he make? $8 million, $9 million a year? Goddamn right he wants a tax cut. Are you kidding me? And this is not the first time Gibson has shown himself to be so badly out of touch on basic economic issues. Remember during the Democratic presidential primary debate, and Gibson challenged the candidates on their support for repealing Bush's tax cuts for people making more than $200,000 a year? And the way he did it, he said that a family in which both parents are school teachers would be hit by the repeal. Oh, my God! And the cluelessness on Charlie's part was so apparent. Remember the audience actually burst out laughing at him? And as Jameson Fosier winds up here, so far the news media's coverage of the stimulus debate has consisted largely of repeating false Republican spin and pontificating about which side has been making their arguments more successfully, all the while ignoring the media's own role in aiding the Republicans. Oh, my God. This is one of the reasons that liberal or progressive or democratic or whatever you want to call it, talk radio, is going to be expunged from the airwaves. Because we sit here and talk about things like we just sat here and talked about. There is no room for any kind of fact. Media Matters. All sorts of websites put this stuff out. Do you think Charlie Gibson would ever quote something from Media Matters? Do you think the filthy pig man would ever even make an attempt to get the truth out? No, of course not. So that's why it is critically important to one by one eliminate the radio stations.
Oh, let's switch to sports talk. Yeah, we got 5 sports talk stations here in San Diego or Miami. We need another.
Goddamn bastards. Gary writes, hi, Mike. At least Obama walked the walk and tried to be a uniter and not a divider. He had to be splashed with the cold water of political reality. Nonetheless, he tried. He will probably keep the lines of communication open, but he realizes to get things done, will have to be by the majority, unless Harry Reid rolls over. It is a sad commentary about our political culture. I can only imagine what our diplomats must go through. Hell, it's probably easier dealing with the North Koreans. Maybe our kids can do better when they grow to adulthood and take the reins. Gary, take the reins of what? What's going to be left? Huh? Oh, my God. Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey writes, Mike, why the hell is Obama shocked by the way the congressional Republicans are acting? Has he been living under a rock for the past 30 years? And don't get me started on Harry Reid. It wouldn't surprise me at all if I find out that Senate Republicans gave him atomic wedgies every morning in the Senate cloakroom. You know Paula. She calls in all the time. By the time the stimulus package, she writes, passes. Nice framing there, huh? Why don't they call it a jobs bill or a recovery bill? You know, what people think of when they hear stimulus package? I can't say that. No, I can't say that either. Oh, that's great. If it passes at all, it will have been whittled down so much that it won't do a damn thing for anybody. It's been reported that among the things removed to make the stimulus package more palatable to Republicans are Head Start funding and funding for special education. Of course, more money has been appropriated for defense spending. I wish, Paula writes, Obama and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi would just tell Republicans to sit the F down and shut the F up. And the always disappointing blue dog Democrats should be told, want to play games? Fine, but prepare yourself to face party-backed challengers in your next primary. What amazes me even more, Paula writes, than what's going on in Washington is the fact that it surprises us. I think we finally need to get it into our heads that our elected officials just aren't that into us. Have I mentioned yet tonight, Paula writes, how much I hate these people? I like your analogy there, Paula, of the stimulus package. I wish I could say it on the air. All right, let me try. She says, when people hear the term stimulus package, now I'm going to paraphrase, it brings to mind self-stimulation that the nuns, if you went to Catholic school, warned you against. A stimulus package. It sounds like, Paul writes, they're being self-stimulated. And you know what? She writes, they probably are. There, I did it, right? I did it. Wish I could use the language of Paula. Paula, you're great. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. And phone calls. I see if all five lines are lit up. We'll take your calls when we come back. Stay with us.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, one more email here and then your phone calls. This is from John in San Antonio. He writes, Mike, regarding... stimulus. Why don't they just send every household a check for $20,000? It's the same as the last three bailouts anyway. If my math is right, about $2 trillion, I'd have that spent by noon. That would stimulate this fake economy, or better yet, simply eliminate every citizen's debt. Just start over. To hell with the bankers. Let them die. The system is fixed and illegitimate anyway. I bet about 90% of Americans would vote for that. Then the 1% printing the money can just retire. We can take over from there, but maybe I'm nuts. By the way, you are right about these old white men. To listen to Arlen Specter and Ben Nelson ramble on and on about bipartisanship and blah, cough, blah, slurp, and then hack up a loogie is really depressing. But then again, have you gotten a load of Phil Gingrey? He's your guy in Georgia, right? And then expletive deleted, John in San Antonio. Yeah, I hear you. All right, to your phone calls. Phone calls. Start with Tammy in Joplin, Missouri, listening on the Internet. Tammy, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Mike.
Hey.
You're absolutely right about everything.
Uh-oh.
You're right about John Yoo. You're right about the Republicans and their backstabbing crap.
Yeah.
Man. You're right about Bush and Cheney and their fear-mongering for years. You're right about Rush Limbaugh and his setting up of the American people.
I hear a butt coming, though.
And I'm sitting here. I've had a couple beers. I got a kid that went to Iraq.
Oh, really? He's there now, or she, or is it a boy or girl? Man
it's
or woman?
The boy. He's been there a couple weeks.
Couple of weeks.
And 5 days ago, the little SOB, 1,500 jobs in the military, and he picks bomb disposal.
Bomb disposal?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
A bitch. And 5 days ago, a bomb went off in Iraq and killed four bomb disposal specialists. And I'm still sitting here waiting to find out.
But you don't know if it was your son?
It was four American bomb disposal specialist. That's all we know. The media hasn't picked up on it. The nothing. And we military families that are part of the unit are still sitting here waiting. I can't tell you what unit. I can't tell you where they're at because that would be against the rules.
Yeah.
but you're absolutely right. John, you...
Well, wait a second, Tammy. I hope to God, and I'm a, I'm not religious. I hope to God it wasn't your son. Would you have heard something by now? I mean...
No, actually not, because, you know, I've been keeping track over at iCasualties.
Yeah.
And if you go over to iCasualties.org...
Right.
And up at the top, click on fatalities or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you'll see that we lost more soldiers for the last 5 months to non-combat stuff than to combat.
Yeah, I read something the other day that we lost more soldiers to suicide in January than we did to combat deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. More
right,
suicides.
But I'm talking about soldiers in Iraq.
Right, I understand. Is
We're
there any...
actually losing more to non-combat stuff than to combat.
Well, I just...
We lost 12, and nobody knows why they died. They just died. That's what the Army... That's what's on the DOD website.
Right.
You click on their name over at iCasualties, and it just says under investigation. And I've been following this because there's over 100 women that have died in Iraq, and 80% of them died in non-combat.
Yeah.
And there's never been any investigations. There's never been any closures. And I'm like, you know, I keep writing to President Obama. I keep emailing through that change.gov and say, hey, I know you're dealing with the economy right now, but we military families, we need some answers here. We need some help.
Hey, listen, Tammy, I want you to do me a favor, if you don't mind. I'm just going to make a request to you. As soon as... you find out about your son. Will you that he's okay? Will you call now? Because now, everyone listening to this and me are concerned about your son.
Everybody at Randy Rhodes' message board knows. I'm a poster over there. I'm Blue and Mo. And if you go over to her message board and you look over in the Afghanistan Iraq, the first 12 posts in the Afghanistan Iraq forum are from me.
All right. Well, but I very seldom go to Randy's website. So when you hear that your son is okay, will you call back in?
I will call back
in. Okay. All right.
But I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, and I'm not getting any answers. I understand that the economy and what's going on in this country is important, but we military families want answers.
I hear you.
We want out of Iraq. We want out of Afghanistan. And if you're going to keep us there, then give us the damn helmets, the inserts, the body armor. We want water. We want food. We don't want KBR giving us water out of Euphrates with bugs and dead body parts in it. We don't want ice delivered to us with body fluids and stuff in it, because, you know, they're getting sued for that right now.
Well, it also makes soldiers deathly ill and can cost them their lives. Tammy, I got to leave it there. I hope you will remember to call when you find out that your son is okay. All right? Thanks, Tammy. We'll be back after the break here. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. Let's go right back to your phone calls. There's a familiar name, Southside Carl from Chicago. Hey, Carl, welcome to the program. Hey, Carl.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm sitting here, and I've been watching the Senate debates, and tonight I thought I had blew my cap when I heard they had a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I heard who was in it, I did blow my cap.
Who's in it?
Well, Nelson from Nebraska, well, I know he's conservative.
Yeah.
But when I heard that the other Democrat was, well, independent, was Lieberman.
Oh, well, sure.
I lost it, man.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, I really lost. I jumped on the computer, shot off an email right away to Durbin, and said it was, the way I felt about this was no, no, and no.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats, I'm about to pull my hair out about this, man, because after they introduced this, Lindsey Graham comes on the Senate floor, and he started talking about, well, people should be saying, well, who won and who lost. And then he tells, other side, that, well, you know, you lost 11, we lost 2.
Right.
So, you know, since this, they've been cocking their legs, marking and saying, well, this is how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Democrat, Democrat or anyone, right now, you can't be sitting in the middle on the fence. You know, you got to have to, get off of the fence and do something. And because if you think that, well, oh, you're going to catch heat, you're going to catch heat anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans told them tonight on the Senate floor, basically, that, well, look, you can get nobody in the House, and it looked like you only got 2 here. And then Graham said that, well, he was disappointed with the 2 that did go for this, being Snow and from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
Specter.
Specter, right.
But
me ask you something. Carl, can you imagine if the Republicans had the numerical majority that the Democrats have right now, how much bipartisanship do you think would be going on?
Well, when they had less than this numerical.
That's what I'm talking about.
And right. That's what I don't understand about Democrats. Don't you get it yet?
I know. They don't, do they?
It doesn't seem like it. And, you know, and what makes things worse is that, well, look, they've been trying to say, well, these things don't belong in a stimulus. They belong in regular order, in appropriations.
Right.
But guess what? They don't plan on agreeing to any appropriation bills.
No.
They don't plan on agreeing to any money for housing mortgages. They don't plan on agreeing on any more money for TARP or whatever you want to, for the financial. They don't plan on agreeing on nothing.
Well, like I said, I just wish that Obama or the Democratic Party leadership in the House and or the Senate would just look at these Republicans and you know, blow one of those whistles like reggae bands have or the umpire in a football game has. Blow one of those whistles real loud, and when everybody goes, whoa, what, and turns around, look, and then the person blowing the whistle should say, let me tell you something, Republicans, we don't give a damn what you do. Get out of the way and then just go ahead with the business that the country needs.
That's what I
wish would happen. And I don't understand why the Democrats continue to allow themselves to be rolled by people who have got us here to begin with.
Well, that's my feeling. But one other thing before I let you go, I had, you know, been looking at what they've been doing in Congress and trying to figure out, well, who wanted to go to the head of the class on the GOP side. Well, since I've been looking these last couple of days at this debate thing, I thought Lindsey Graham was, you know, how he was during the last election period, he was, you know, having that on his mind. But over the last couple of days, the little poop butt from up in South Dakota, I think he's figured he's going to put himself up in front of John Thune. And they all little robots.
They are, Carl. It's making
all right, me, Mike. You take it easy and take care.
All right. It's making me as crazy as making you. Thanks, Carl.
All right.
Be good. Watch out. Take care.
All right.
Don't step off the curb without looking both ways. All right, man. All right. I see line three, but I don't see a name there. So let's go to the other line four and talk to Mark, who's calling from Richmond, listening on Sirius. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I had a couple things that I wanted to say, and then I'm going to tie them all in together if you'll let me. It'll be quick.
Sure.
Like the lady that called earlier who has a son who's just been over in Iraq for 2 weeks.
Right.
I just got off the phone last night with my little brother who's, I say little, but, you know, he's like 29 now. I'm 33. And I served in the Air Force during the Clinton administration, and I got out during the downsizing phase, which is the best choice I ever made, in my opinion. But be that as it may, my little brother's been over there for 8 months. He came home for a week to hang out with his wife and kid, who's only 5 years old. And last night, you know, I barely caught him before he had to ship back out this morning for another four, and he's hoping that'll be it. But they're already talking about him going to Afghanistan. So I kind of feel for her in that regard.
Right.
However, he told me in our short conversation that we had that something that I didn't hear reported in any media outlet anywhere was that recently a great portion of Iraq's economy is generated by crops and that are grown by local farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, they're under a severe, severe drought over there, and they haven't gotten anywhere near the amount of rain they need. And so what my brother told me happened was, and I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this, but I'm going to because I don't care, that apparently our government bailed out their farmers in order to rectify and help turn around their economy.
Right.
Which I'm all for because we've sort of destroyed their whole country anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, but, I mean, if you take that, you couple it with our current economic crisis, and there's lots of things like that that go on all around the world that are never reported,
mm-hmm.
where our tax money obviously goes, and then people just assume that it's going for this, that, or the other, but it's traditionally not. And then you couple that with the stonewalling that Obama's getting for his stimulus slash spending slash call it what you want, maybe it'll help plan. And I have to wonder if a reinstitution of the fairness doctrine in some form or shape would actually help better inform people as to what's going on and thus help them make better decisions when they go to the polling place and maybe eventually one day somehow start to turn things around.
And well, go ahead.
Part of that is because there was a lady on Bill Press this morning who's championing it. However, her husband is a former vice president of Air America and is current CEO of another progressive talk radio network, I suppose. And so obviously she has a dog in a fight. But, you know, and Lynn Samuels was railing against it today. And Will Cow, of course, was vehemently against it. And I just wanted to know what you thought about that and if that would help any of these problems that we're talking about.
Okay, let me answer you on the air, Mark, because getting a lot of static through your phone. I appreciate you checking in. As far as the fairness doctrine is concerned, let me just restate something that I said last week. The fairness doctrine originally was set up for television, not radio. And it was set up at a time when there were three television networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. It had nothing really to do with radio. And the reason that the fairness doctrine was set up for television is because images are so much more powerful than the spoken word. Images combined with the spoken word. Let me take a break, and I'll come right back and address this, Mark. I'm crying.
Children die. Cronyism spreading. Come on, Obama. as someone who knew they're not telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
I was flying on you and I... 21 past the hour. All right, very quickly, what Mark asked about the Fairness Doctrine. It was set up for television. we all know that it was repealed or rescinded or whatever. The real problem, that was in the Reagan years. The real problem is what Bill Clinton signed, and that was the Consolidation Act that allowed companies like Clear Channel, it was called J-Corp at the time, to wind up owning, 1,100 radio stations. Once that kind of consolidation happens, you're going to get one point of view and one point of view only. And that point of view will be whatever satisfies what the corporation wants. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. Now, one of the reasons that liberal talk wound up on some Clear Channel stations was because in so many markets where they owned six radio stations, thanks to Bill Clinton, it was just incredible repetition. You might have two stations or three that had the usual lineup of right-wing scum, the first tier. That would be Limbaugh and Hannity and people like that. And then on the other stations, you'd have the second tier of right-wing scum, like Hugh Hewitt and the rest of these thugs. And then there would be some sports talk. So what Clear Channel said was, okay, we'll take our least powerful station in these markets and we'll give it over to liberal talk. And that's exactly what they did. And the liberal talk network at the time that got this arrangement started was Air America. And, of course, we had to practically eat our own elbows in order to get even that. And the only reason Clear Channel did it had nothing to do with Fairness Doctrine or trying to present two points of view is because they couldn't cut it in the market if they owned seven radio stations. They were all chasing the same radio station, the same program, same format, chasing the same advertising dollar. So that's how that happened. The Fairness Doctrine itself is kind of outdated at this point. We don't have three television stations to choose from anymore. We have, depending on whether you have cable or satellite, you have as many as 600. So forget about it. It's not going to happen. And even if there were still only three, which there never will be again, the explosion in media outlets, the explosion in communication absolutely ruled the Fairness Doctrine to be completely impossible to enforce. How are you going to enforce it? How, with 20 news channels on television, or 30 if you count the business channels, how are you ever going? And what do? Do you tell Al Jazeera? Do you tell the BBC? That they have to subscribe to our Fairness Doctrine. So it can't be done. Global communications wiped it out. Consolidation further wiped it out. The idea of the Fairness Doctrine ever being reinstated is just absolutely never, ever, ever going to happen. Now, the right-wing bastards who infest talk radio know this. They know this. So when you hear the pig man or some of these other scum get on the air and talk about, wow, they're going to try to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine, so-called, it was never fair, and that'll end right-wing talk radio, conservative talk radio. That's called a straw man. That's called a bloody shirt. That's called a lie. That's called garbage. It's one more thing to upset, scare, and twist the minds of these dumbass right-wingers that listen to Rush Limbaugh and the rest of the swine. So it's never going to happen. The pig man knows it's never going to happen. Everybody in radio and television know it's never going to happen. So that's the best I can do on that, Mark. Forget about it, okay? Forget about it. It will never, ever come back. And from a purely practical point of view, it's probably good that it doesn't. It's impossible to enforce now. It used to be very easy. You would go into a city if there was violation, and you could say to the three television network outlets in the city, you must present both points of view on any issue that could be considered political. Okay. Easy enough. How are you going to do that with 300 channels, with 30 or 40 channels of news and business news and this news and that news and channels that are available on satellite and cable systems now that come from foreign countries, that come from China, that come from the Middle East, come from the BBC, come from France, come from Russia? How are you going to do it? Can't be done. So it wasn't the Fairness Doctrine was the canceling of the Fairness Doctrine was not the booger bear that some people would have you believe. The booger bear was Bill Clinton signing legislation that the Republicans put together deliberately to choke off any kind of competition. And that was the consolidation bill, whatever it was called. There used to be a time when you can own more than three stations in a market, or two. And then FM changed that. But that's where the problem lies. It doesn't lie. This is one thing that doesn't lie on the desk of Ronald Reagan. It lies on the desk of Bill Clinton. End of story.
Truth, justice, and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
And I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk. And you talk that talk. You knocks me out. Out off my feet. Boom, 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 boom.
Bang, 25 bang, before bang. The hour. Where are we? Back to your phone calls. Christopher is calling from Rochester, New York. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
It's Christopher Henley. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. Well, I guess we finally have a legitimate reason for waterboarding. Republicans, it is. I'm just very frustrated.
I hear you.
What's going on up here in Rochester, New York is just something that, I do a lot of tax preparation and bookkeeping for lots mm-hmm. of tiny small companies and I've been a contractor myself years ago, and what I'm noticing and people just aren't talking about it in the news, like the sales tax returns. I don't know if you have that down in Atlanta, but in New York State we have quarterly sales tax that are due, and I'm watching really wonderful clients of mine, some of them talk with other clients who aren't able to pay their sales tax that was due in December. I mean,
well, isn't that but isn't that a trust tax?
It is. That's the problem. And there's so many what people are doing now is they're so strapped.
Right.
That
they're using that money.
They're using that money because they think, "Oh, don't worry, things are going to be better next month." I'm like,
yeah.
"No, guys, you can't do that because
right.
that's part of the, you know, that's what we rely on." And just, you know, one of the things that the unemployment situation up here is that people that are unemployed, okay, who get unemployment insurance is one thing, but there's so many contractors, you know, contractors are kind of like, you know, in the cartoon Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the land of misfit toys, you know, they're the plumbers, the electricians, kind of the backbone, but those
mm-hmm.
guys are self-employed.
Right.
That work is just, I'm hearing so many people come in, talk to me, say, "Hey, what do I do? How do I get more work? How do I go out and network?" And it's just not there.
And I would guess that they're probably not filing the quarterly self-employment tax returns that they're supposed to file.
Yeah, and they don't have it. They don't even have the money.
Right. Been there.
Because they're thinking everything was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And you try to tell. I was like, I was hoping somebody, you know, when I tell these people, I'm like, no, you make a mistake by doing that. So don't do that. You know, you got to make those payments, but where are they going to get work? Mm. There's no unemployment for these guys because they're self-employed.
Right, right.
So they're out of work.
What is the overall economic profile, I guess would be the right word, in Rochester? I've heard that things are just horrible in upstate New York.
It is disastrous because, you know, your average contractor can make anywhere, some guys who charge $15 an hour to some guys who do really, really, really well, maybe $50 an hour. But then by the time you put the gasoline expense, the truck expense, some of these guys are so leveraged with, you know, the toll leasing, the truck leasing, and there's no money left to buy food. I mean, sometimes people joke, I'm like, these guys can't even go out to a bar and have a beer where they normally would go out every couple of days and hang out with their buddies. Right. They're ashamed to because they don't have any money. What is the answer for these people? It's just... there's no plan. I mean, even when you look at the stimulus bill, I think absolutely go ahead, I mean, as much as you possibly can. But what's going to happen to these other people who are not even entitled to unemployment, so that they're not in the public assistance system, which is a whole nother disaster. Tell somebody who's poor to live on $700 a month, which is what it is in New York State, by the way. So many people have the delusional thinking that you get to be a multi, you know, gazillionaire on welfare. In New York State, your total maximum benefit is $720.
Jesus.
How do you feed your family on that? That's somebody on welfare.
Right, right.
And then how do you get the guy who is in entitled to unemployment because, like I said, you know, a lot of contractors like working by themselves. They don't want to work for somebody else, but they've been able to hobble together a living, you know, kind of like a radio host. You know, when you guys do your thing, you don't have a lot of people that are telling you what to do because you kind of run your own show. The same thing with contractors.
Right, right.
But there's no money for them. There's no money for them to pay their bills. There's no money for them to pay their taxes. What are they supposed to do, Mike?
At some point, and I believe this, Christopher, at some point there is going to be a reaction. That reaction is already occurring in Greece, in France, in Spain, in Iceland. Oh, my God, Iceland. In Russia, in China, the reaction to, rightly or wrongly, what those of us in the working class see as an abject failure, an utter failure on the part of government to protect us from this. At some point, that reaction is going to occur in this country. I honestly don't see how it can't.
And what is the come to Jesus moment, you know, so to speak? I mean, they're literally waterboarding our country. I mean, it's just volunteer, line up, bend over, and get the water up your nose until you drown. We're drowning in debt. A lot of my friends are, their credit cards are 32%. You know, the life of a contractor, when you hang, go to Home Depot, take somebody aside and say, how's it going for you?
Right.
If you want to know what America's thinking, you know, I tell people this, whether it's a fiscal conservative or a lefty liberal, it's just ask the person who's actually installing your washer, your dryer, when's his next job? It's insane. And I'm 46 years old. I remember, you know, during the whole Carter administration, and actually before that, I think it was when it was Ford with the gasoline rationing and stuff like that. At least, I don't know, I feel like after like 9/11, you know, I was in New York City at the time, and I lost a couple of friends of mine. Two of them were cops, one of them was a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could have probably got me to do anything, you know, at that point, to do anything to protect the people that I love. Anybody would feel that way. You know, it's a natural response.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a logical response to something that happens to you, because there was probably a lot of reasons why people did what they did. But it's like this whole country was just taken, brought to a point or a pinnacle of how to respond to something like to 9/11, and then all of a sudden they just turned around and squandered it all, 8 years of it. It's like giving Obama a baby and they haven't changed the diaper in 8 years and say, here, by the way, take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
And in that diaper is all of us.
Yeah, I think we have one chance, and that is whatever comes out of the House and the Senate in terms of a economic spending plan to get things going. We've got that one chance. If it's not done right, then I think there is going to be chaos in this country. And by chaos, I mean violence. Because we've had since the end of World War II, which is a hell of a long time. What is it? 60 years. We have had uninterrupted, except for a few normal fluctuations up and down, which what appeared to be normal to us in the working class. We have had nothing but a materialistic society that got more and more and more. And we are not ready to go through emotionally or any other way what our grandparents and what our parents and grandparents went through in the so-called Great Depression. So one shot is what we've got here, that Obama and this Congress and of course the Republicans, who want to see America destroyed anyway, they couldn't care less. But the Democrats, rational people in this country, and not all Democrats are rational either in Congress, believe me, I'm fully aware of that. But there's one chance. If what they come up with doesn't turn the corner in this economy, even a small turn, it doesn't have to be anything dramatic, just something that people can say, okay, I'm getting some hope back. If that doesn't happen, then this country could very easily descend into the kind of chaos, anarchy, violence, whatever you want to call it, and on a much larger scale than what we're seeing starting to break out in countries around the planet. So this is a very, very, very dangerous time, Christopher, in my opinion. All right. We have a break coming up here fairly quickly. I'm going to ask our engineer in Phoenix, Ian, to tell me in the headphones who's next. Stephen is calling from Framingham. Oh, this is our financial services guy, right?
Yep, how you doing?
Hey, Stephen. I'm not sure. Well, I'm okay because I'm okay because I don't own stock. I'm not in a 401k program. We're kind of strictly on our own. So I guess I'm as okay as anybody could possibly be in this mess.
Well, things have only gotten somewhat worse in the last week. Actually, you've had a couple of really great calls while I've been waiting. One is Carl. He actually reported really right on what's been going on in Congress and the Senate, and so it's really good reporting. A couple of things I wanted to say to you tonight.
Can I get you? Hold on.
Yeah.
I got to do a break here.
Absolutely.
And we'll come back, and we'll pick up Stephen. All right, let me put Stephen on hold. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Ten before the hour, thanks to the usual crew of reprobates, Ian Huff, who engineered the program, Ben Birch, who's our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, who ethically advised the program, Bruce Enberg, our economic correspondent, and the executive producer is Catherine Bay. All right, we're talking with Stephen, who is in the, I guess it would be fair to say, financial services business, who's calling from Framingham, Mass. All right, Stephen.
All right. I'd like to quote from you. from the economic news release, the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay.
This is what all the news people have been quoting from, but there's a couple of numbers that have been left out, as scary as that is. Unemployment. Everybody's been quoting percentages, but I'm going to quote you the number of people. It is 11.6 million people unemployed.
No, those are people who show up on the unemployment rolls. Fair to say there are much more, many more than that?
And I'm about to get to that.
Okay.
Funny you mentioned that, because that's the other thing that's not mentioned. Let's not mention percentages. We're talking people, and that's something that I've always, whenever I get on with you,
mm-hmm.
it's human beings we're talking about. We're
right.
talking about families. Now the people that are now counted. This is from that same piece of paper from the United States government, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that was put out today. 3.5 million people were not counted.
Mm.
The reason why was because they simply stopped looking during the last 4 weeks. They've been unemployed for most of the last year. We are talking about nearly 15 million people.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is unemployed. Forget percentages. Doesn't matter. 15 million. But now I'm going to add more on to that, because that also does not truly include the people that I deal with, which is, and I think his name was Chris, that had brought up the unemployed up in upstate New York.
Right,
well,
right.
Guess what? Rochester happens to be one of the places that's on my desk and is one of those really hard-hit areas.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about millions. I couldn't put a number on it. My guess would be, my educated guess would be, somewhere between another 5 to 10 million people over the last couple of years who have lost their businesses that they own, small
mm-hmm.
businesses. Where do they go to work, and where do their workers go to work? I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
That is the true numbers, and the depression that I have been talking about for a long time is more than here, and it is not going to go away for a number of years, and I don't know how many years that is.
Why isn't it reported this way?
I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say by the news anchors, and the two that I zeroed in on tonight, Charlie Gibson and Mika Brzezinski. I don't quite understand why they are so willing to simply talk about the Republican Party talking points rather than trying to let Americans understand how serious this problem is and how much we have to support some kind of economic spending plan to if that'll work. And again, I don't think $800 billion is enough to do the job that has to be done here.
Yeah, there isn't that much time, so let me just hit it real quick. Yeah, you're on it. I mean, it's not being reported. I guess I could, do the cliche and say, the media is controlled by the right. I don't know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm 52 years old, so of course I'm old enough to remember when the press was the press. But all of that aside, I said it last time, I'll say it again. I was against every single bailout package. Am I for this one? There are some good things in this one. The Republicans are doing their very damnedest to take out whatever is good, and why the Democrats are even allowing it that you have brought up, you've brought up a great point. I don't understand it myself. It's insanity.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say again what I would do. I would make it $2 trillion. It doesn't matter.
Right.
$1 trillion alone should go to the infrastructure of this country.
Mm-hmm.
The other trillion you could split up into every single kind of green energy thing you want. Jobs, investment. You can run the tape from the last time I said it. I am really a little concerned at this point. I gotta say this. I'm very concerned about this quote-unquote spending thing, this consumer thing. That is not going to get us out of anything. It's going to get us deeper. We have to go back to, you know, the first 240 years of this country, which is, first of all, saving.
Mm-hmm.
Saving and smart investment. You know, that consumer thing is republicanism. It has nothing to do with long-term health in
right.
any way, shape, or form. We have absolutely no savings in this country.
No cushion. No.
Do you remember when you and I were both growing up and they used to say what the savings rate was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's disappeared, and it's because of republicanism. And the other thing I wanted to say very quickly is corporatism. I know this will be an impossibility almost because Democrats are just scared of themselves. But there is a thing that's still on the books called the Sherman
Antitrust Act, right?
Yeah. Well, there has to. And another thing that's been put on that Clinton did was allow Mobil and Exxon to get put back together in '94. And
yeah, after it was broken up at the turn of the last century. Hey, listen, Stephen, we're out of time. We're about to be eaten alive by the top of the hour station break. So please stay in touch. I appreciate the fact that you call in. All right.
Take care.
Okay, you too. I'll see you Monday, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Oh, and by the way, Kevin Kinney, have a great weekend wherever you are.